Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick here for this week's Know Your Foe episode regarding the Detroit Lions and the Ravens matchup there on Sunday. We finally get a Sunday 1 p.m. game, and joining me here to talk about it is our good friend Tage Seth. Tage, how you doing?
Good. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about the Lions-Ravens game this Sunday.
Yeah, so Tage, give you a little bit of background. PFF intern, going to certainly be working in the NFL at some point if he doesn't get stolen away by finance or some other industry to do a lot of good work. But certainly has all the track to be in the NFL as a PFF intern this summer in their R&D department. Great place to work and does a great job of explaining things very well. So I like having him on the show to explain new metrics from PFF or new charts of his own that he does. But appreciate the friendship to the show you've shown, Tage, and we'd love to have you on more, of course, after this one.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I love coming on. It's always great to talk to you, Ken.
Well, thanks, Tage. So let's the Lions we'll talk about a little bit here. Let's start by the offseason this year, obviously, the big trade. We'll start there, but also the other moves they made, the draft and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Lions, this is probably one of the busiest off seasons I've had following them as a fan, especially just with the Matthew Stafford trade at the very beginning of the off season. You know, Stafford's a quarterback who has played basically every game for the Lions since 2011. I think he was playing 138 in a row until his injury in 2019 and then played the whole 2020 season. So having a new quarterback in there has been interesting. I don't think fans have like fully gotten used to not having Stafford under center. So that definitely was the biggest move.
So is Stafford obviously has been a good quarterback for a not so good team for a while. Is he a player that is very polarizing, or do most Detroit Lions fans just love him and worry about the rest of the team?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a lot of that where Stafford was representative of the community with his toughness, his hard work that he put in on and off the field. So a lot of fans gravitated to him because of that. But, you know, in Detroit, he always had his doubters because of the fact that they didn't win many football games with him as quarterback.
All right. I mean, I do remember something from Stafford's rookie year, which was just one of the ultimate toughness things. But he left the field with like 5 seconds to go or something in a game. And because he came out due to injury, he couldn't go back in. And then there was a timeout called by the opponents, I believe, or it might've been the Lions. And he suddenly realized the timeout had been called. And, you know, he's mic'd up and he's you know, moaning basically. Mm-hmm. And he goes, wait a minute, was that a timeout? And he runs back right on the field and threw the game winning touchdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the type of stuff where, like, you see that, you know, live when you're watching Stafford's rookie year, and you're like, wow, okay, like, how can you not root for someone like this that wants to throw, you know, a game-winning touchdown pass when his team was, like, 2-9 at the time. So, like, it wasn't like they were fighting for a playoff race or anything, but, yeah, very impressive stuff there.
Yeah. All right, so Jared Goff is the new guy. So what is the initial take on Jared Goff?
So the initial take on Jared Goff is that I think he's fine. Like, when things are going right for Jared Goff, he's going to be an average quarterback, right? So if you look at Jared Goff, he's average in advanced statistics or just watching him when the pocket is clean. But he's not good under pressure, which is one of the reasons why McVay wanted to trade him. And then he's average when he's doing play action and stuff like that, and like stuff that can help a quarterback. But on standard dropbacks, he's below average there. So when things are going right for Jared Goff, he's going to be able to move the ball with some weapons and stuff like that. But he's not a type of quarterback that can really carry a team and move them up to an elite level like some other guys in the league.
All right. So the Ravens had a good experience with Jared Goff in 2019. They, as Eric Weddle said, peeled their faces off when they went out to L.A. to play the Rams. Mm-hmm. And Goff's jitteriness was a big part of that. And his inability to really pass well under pressure when moved off the spot. Is that something you'd expect to see from the Ravens to try and do to go? Been very light on scheme, particularly this last week against Mahomes, but go back to more scheme to get after him?
Yeah, I think the Ravens are almost like the perfect matchup for stopping Goff. Like, Goff does really well against a lot of odd coverages when there's like a single safety. But the Ravens use cover zero with no safeties, you know, almost more than anyone in the league other than, I think, Belichick. So that's a good way to stop Goff is by playing cover zero, like keeping everything short because that's where he likes to throw. And another thing is, yeah, like bringing pressure, which is what the Ravens do so well, and they're so aggressive with it, is really something that I think could throw him off his game.
All right. How about other moves this offseason? Who did the Lions acquire that's exciting? I know Levi Onwuzurike was somebody that I liked in the draft. Tell us about him, about other acquisitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Levi, second-round pick. They're trying to build the defensive line out. And so he had an injury for most of training camp and wasn't really able to get acclimated with the team. So he only played a couple snaps against the Packers this past Monday night. But Aleem McNeil is the third round pick, who's also a defensive tackle. And he's the one that is actually getting people in Detroit excited about him. He's had an ability right now to clog gaps and to kind of create pressure and stuff like that.
Another guy I absolutely loved going into the draft, NC or NC State, I forget. But anyway, he's a very big body there who does a good job clogging up and absorbing blocks. And the Ravens' defensive line is way too old. I mean, it's a real risk they took to not take a defensive lineman in this draft. They ended up drafting a fullback with a fifth-round pick when Kyrus Tonga of BYU and other guys were still on the board, including developmental left tackles. But I thought the overlooking the defensive line in particular was one of the real mistakes. And Detroit ended up getting two great guys. I mean, Onwuzurike is kind of like a Madubuike clone in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Very similar size and quickness. Very, very fast off the snap guys. So Onwuzurike, I know Michael Crawford probably likes him even better than I do, local analyst here, but I liked him too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very excited to see him play. We'll definitely see him with more snaps this week. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Has he been pretty much used as a three tech so far this year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then McNeil is kind of like a one tech, zero tech type player. Yeah.
All right, perfect. Now, definitely, I'm jealous of the draft picks already in terms of who you got, though we're happy with OA so far. Let's talk about key injuries right now. Jeffrey Okuda, I know, got injured in week one. Is he still out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Okuda will be out basically the whole year with a torn Achilles.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right, that's a big loss, unfortunately. He had kind of a tough year as a rookie, didn't he, in coverage? But this was, you know, probably would have been a step forward, much like Patrick Queen. You know, you'd expect a guy mm-hmm. to take a step forward after not having that offseason the first year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there were reports coming out of camp that Okuda was playing with more confidence this year. Definitely an easier scheme to play corner in, under Matt Patricia's heavy man, like cover one scheme. I think Okuda was really struggling with that. So with his new scheme, he was supposed to take the next step forward. So it really stinks that he's not able to play this year.
Yeah, it's always a bummer to lose any player on the first contract for any period. But, mm-hmm. you know, the number three overall draft pick, when that's what you got as Lions, you got draft capital and you got to convert that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bummer. How about the long run cap situation? I know they probably, they in trading these two contracts effectively, do they pick up cap or did they actually drop some cap?
So the really weird thing with the Stafford-Goff trade is that both teams are kind of paying half of the current quarterback's contract that's on their roster and like half of the other quarterback that they traded away. So, but the Lions took on a lot of dead cap to make this trade possible. It can be theorized that one of the two first-round picks that the Rams sent the Lions in that trade was just to take on Jared Goff's like dead cap money because there's so much of it. He has to play next year for the Lions basically because of the dead cap in 2022. But in 2023, there's a potential out where they only have to eat $10 million dead cap, and they can kind of cut him or trade him or something like that, and start looking for a new quarterback.
Is that like a post June 1 cut where they take 10 and 10 in consecutive years, or is it they get rid of the entire thing for $10 million in 1 year? Because that wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, it would just be $10 million for 1 year.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, hey, getting rid of your franchise quarterback costs money, mm-hmm. and that doesn't seem like too expensive, honestly. Mm-hmm. All right, outstanding stuff. Key contract situations. How about players that are coming up on their third, fourth year? Who do the Lions really need to get re-signed right now?
Yeah, I mean the team is pretty young, so there's no really like veteran players that I think need to get re-signed, but TJ Hockenson is definitely, I think, the main focus. His rookie contract is going to be done in 2023 if they pick up the fifth year option, which they probably will, given his level of tight end play. So I think he should be a priority to get re-signed long-term.
Okay. So the Ravens start off the season with Darren Waller and Las Vegas, I can't have wanted to say Oakland, but Las Vegas threw 19 passes to mm-hmm. him in that game. And then of course they get Kelce in week two, and Kelce ran all over him, missed tackle fest on the 46 yard touchdown, made their inside linebackers, frankly, look really silly.
Mm-hmm.
That being the weakness of the Ravens, really looking at their inside linebacker coverage ability, is that something you're maybe expecting the Lions to try and take advantage of?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. If the Lions have a chance in this game to keep it close, it would be for TJ Hockenson to have like 100 yards or something like that. He's definitely the best weapon on the offense. If you watched that Monday night game last week, when the Lions went for a fourth and one, Dan Campbell said in his press conference, the first read for Jared Goff on that play was to look and make sure TJ Hockenson was on a single coverage, and if he was, you would throw it to him, like no matter what. But the Packers double covered him, so Goff had to go elsewhere. So Hockenson should be the focal point of the offense. He's a good run blocker, and he's great pass catcher and really good with the ball in his hand.
All right. We definitely want to talk a little bit about these guys. Let's move over to the offense. You talked a little bit about Jared Goff's strengths and weaknesses, and so moving him off the spot seems to be the same. What is Jared Goff become when he gets moved off the spot? Now, the question I'm asking, I think, is that Baker Mayfield, Collinsworth had a great way to describe the way he throws when he's a little jittery, is that he starts throwing fadeaway jumpers. And it was such a perfect way because it shows exactly what he's. What does Jared Goff do? Does he get rid of the ball too quickly? Does he get less accurate? Does he crouch up and take too many sacks? I mean, what's the problem with it?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a deer in headlights situation where if the first read isn't there and, you know, the pocket is starting to break down, he's going to panic a little bit. His feet work are going to get a little bit slippery, like they're not going to be mechanically sound. And so the types of balls that he's going to throw aren't going to be perfect spirals, and he might miss receivers that are open and stuff like that.
Okay. All right. Outstanding stuff. Let's talk about the offensive line a little bit and just take us through from left to right. Current state of the offensive line, I'm sure it can't be any worse than the Ravens. So let's hear it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So coming into this season, Taylor Decker, who, you know, got a contract extension last offseason, is a cornerstone franchise left tackle, great pass blocker. He's been put on IR. So Penei Sewell, the Lions' first-round draft pick out of Oregon, got moved back to his natural position that he played in college because he originally was going to play right tackle for the Lions. Now he's back at left tackle, and he's, you know, he's doing really well there. Like, he hasn't allowed a sack this season so far. He's transitioned very nicely, and I really have had no complaints about him. At left guard, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I did have a question about Sewell since he's such a big deal, the seventh overall selection. What sort of pressures did he give up against San Francisco? And I'm seeing PFF has him for six, but can you tell me, was he more of a giving ground to mirror? Was he more of a trying to use his length effectively to get people, you know, south of the pocket? Mm-hmm. What's his style as a pass blocker?
Yeah, I mean, the six pressures is a little bit misleading because the Lions threw 70 passes in that game. So it was a lot of pass blocking reps for him. And, you know, going up against a Bosa is always tough. So, yeah, it is the type of stuff where he doesn't get, like, beat completely. His hands are good enough to kind of slow it down. But sometimes he just gets beat either, like, outside or slightly inside. And he was doing that a lot in the preseason at right tackle, but now it's a lot better at left tackle.
So he'll probably see two things, I would guess, from the Ravens. One is that that Odafe Owe will probably try and get him on an island wide and initiate that first move to try and get him to overreact to it, because we've seen that now from Owe for the first 2 weeks, which we're loving, by the way, here in Baltimore. But the other thing is you can count on the left B gap probably being peppered. I'm assuming we're going to talk about the guard in a moment, for blitz opportunities and stunt opportunities. Mm-hmm. Is that something, has Sewell exchanged assignments well, and has he reacted well on an island?
Yeah, that hasn't happened too much in the first ball game, like, or first two games, the stunts and stuff like that. Green Bay was pretty vanilla with their defensive scheme on Monday. But on an island, I think he's done really well so far. So this will be a good test for him going up against Owe, who was big in that Sunday night game.
Who did he face a lot of Za'Darius Smith for the Packers, or who did he face?
Well, Za'Darius Smith is out with injury, so it was a little bit of Rashawn Gary and stuff like that, and they weren't really bringing their linebackers that often.
Okay, all right. Well, fair enough. Well, let's move over to left guard.
Yeah, left guard is Jonah Jackson, who was a third-round pick out of Ohio State two drafts ago. So last year he played his rookie year, mm-hmm. and he was pretty good his rookie year. Like, he's not going to be an elite left guard in the NFL, but he's good enough. He's struggled a little bit more this season, but again, like, that first game was kind of weird, and then he played a little bit better against the Packers. But that's definitely an area to attack. The Lions is left guard, I think.
Yeah, Jackson, I really liked coming out of Ohio State. I did think he was probably more of a run blocking asset than a pass blocking asset. So I assume that's turned out to be true.
Yes. Yeah, definitely true.
Mm-hmm. All right. And what does he give you in the run blocking game as opposed to good power, good ability to move people?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the theme of the Lions offensive line is just good, you know, athletic athletes. Like, they're able to all do stuff, like get down the field on run blocking snaps and stuff like that. So it's really impressive to watch, actually.
All right. Very cool. So center, let's move on.
Frank Ragnow, I think, has an argument for the best center in football. He's very good pass blocker, but he excels in the run game. The way he is able to move down the field quickly to get to the second level and block linebackers there. And he's good with power, too. Like, he can maul people over if asked. Last year, one of my favorite things to watch for the Lions was when, he played the Falcons. And it was one of his best games of the season. And Falcons have a good interior defensive line. So that was really interesting to watch. And he did really well that game, too.
So Ragnow been already re-signed for a second contract?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the main thing about the offensive line is all, like, five starters, once Decker comes back and Sewell moves back over, is they're signed for the next 3 years, either under a rookie contract.
Continuity.
Yeah, yeah. That's really exciting when you think about the rebuild and stuff like that.
All right, let's move over to right guard then.
Right guard is definitely the weakest part of the offensive line. It's Vitae from the Eagles. They signed him to play tackle, and I think he was too big for tackle, so he kind of got moved inside to guard after being really, really bad in 2020. And then again this year, he hasn't really shown much of being good. So like it's a big contract that's kind of sitting on the books, and they'll probably have to figure out some type of solution for a right guard. But right now, it's definitely not worth the money the Lions paid him.
That's interesting. So he was signed for how many years and for what kind of contract?
He was, I believe it was $60 million for 4 years.
Jesus, that really shows you how difficult it is to find tackles in this league. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, so this is second year with Detroit. So presumably it's getting a little bit cheaper to get out of that contract probably in year three, but still might have to spread it over 2 years.
Yes. Yeah, probably. Yeah. It was 5 years, $45 million actually. So not as bad as the 4 years, but
still a lot.
still a lot for, you know, a tackle who's now moved to guard and isn't even that good at playing guard. So,
all right. That's interesting. So the Ravens, they didn't play the Eagles. They played the Eagles in 2020 after Vitae was already gone, and they had another guy who was even worse playing guard there then. Jermon Brown, I want to say was his name. He's been around the league since. All right, so Vitae at right guard. So this is certainly looking like opportunities for the Ravens to get back into scheme generated pass rush as opposed to what they did with these four-man rushes against the Chiefs, which I don't think people criticize. I think people understand that Mahomes will eat you alive if you blitz, but then you look at the other side of that and Mahomes threw for 11.1 yards per pass attempt, so that's not getting it done either. So be good, hopefully a game where the Ravens can get back to some of what Martindale usually likes to do. At right tackle, used to be Ricky Wagner. Of course, he's still out there as a free agent right now.
Yeah, Wagner was a very exciting free agent when he was signed, but didn't live up to the expectations, which happens often, happened often in the Matt Patricia era, I guess. So now it's Matt Nelson. So he's, again, he was supposed to be the backup tackle entering the season, but when Decker went down, Sewell switched from right to left tackle, and then Matt Nelson's kind of filled in. So he's just kind of a stopgap. Right side of the offensive line is weak right now. He's not particularly good, and we haven't really seen much of him, but we can assume that he's not going to like shut down anyone or anything.
Okay, UDFA player there, Nelson, so at least they're doing it cheap. If you're not going to do it good, you better do it cheap. Ravens have Patrick McCary right now at right tackle, which is along those same lines, frankly, of although he played very well on Sunday night. All right, we're talking about the Lions here. Let's get back to it. So how about we talk about the receiving core now? And kind of take me through roles and responsibilities among those guys.
Yeah, the receiving core is pretty barren, considering the losses of Kenny Galladay, who the Ravens were interested in, if I remember correctly, and then Marvin Jones, who were good wide receivers for the Lions for a couple of years. So it's tough right now to look at this receiving core and be excited about them. So Quintez Cephas is probably the wide receiver one on the team. He's not fast at all. Coming out of college, he got a lot of comps to Anquan Boldin. So he's kind of a slower receiver, but he's just good with his body and good with contested catches. And we saw that with his first touchdown against the Packers on Monday night, where he wasn't like super open, but he kind of just positioned himself in the end zone to catch that ball.
Okay, so I'm trying to find his targets here for these couple of games. He's been targeted 13 times so far this season for 75 yards. Okay. All right. So, is he a yak player? Is he a guy who can do something exciting after the catch?
No, he's not the yak player. The yak wide receiver, I'd say, is Amon-Ra St. Brown, the rookie from USC. He's very similar to Juju, in where I think they're like kind of good as all-around receivers. They're not like especially elite at anything. So if the Ravens have experience, a lot of experience preparing to defend Juju, they should see someone pretty similar in St. Brown.
Okay. I wouldn't say they've really had a lot of success against Juju, but they have to face him from time to time. And he looks like he's gotten a reasonable target share, but it's not like they're throwing to him every down either with 8 targets in 2 games. Mm-hmm. All right. Who take us through the rest of the receivers while we're here.
Yeah, so Tyrell Williams was supposed to be like the burner, but he's also on injury. So then a lot of the targets are going to just Hockenson and DeAndre Swift. DeAndre Swift coming out of the backfield. The Lions are using some 20 personnel with Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift. So that's been interesting too. So because Swift is really good as a receiving back also.
Okay, 20 personnel folks out there is pony backfield. It's two pure running backs, right? Not a running back and a fullback you're talking about.
Yes, yeah, two pure. Or they have a fullback in there too sometimes too.
Okay, but when they have a fullback in, is it usually 21, or are they doing some 20 with a fullback, a running back, and 3 wide receivers? Because that would be kind of weird.
Yeah, it's 21 usually.
Yeah. All right, tell me about Trinity Benson.
Mm-hmm. I haven't really seen much of Trinity Benson yet. He just got here, but I know he was someone that they really wanted on the roster. They thought that he had some potential. So hopefully we see more of him as the season goes on.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Any other wide receivers you want to talk about at all?
Yeah, those are definitely the main ones. Yeah, it's a lot of Hockenson and Swift, and then Cephas will get mixed in there too.
All right. So if we go with after Hockenson, let's talk about the other tight ends on the team, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Brandon Fells is the other tight end. Darren Fells is the other tight end on the team. Yeah. So he hasn't played that much. I think he's only gotten targeted once this year. But he's just someone that like big to have around where he can stay in line and block if Hockenson is going to run out, if they're in 12 personnel or something like that.
Pretty good run blocker. He's the kind of guy who always has a job around this league, and he spent time in Cleveland and Houston. The Ravens know him from both of those places probably best. But a guy who pretty much will always have a job at 6'7", 270, uh-huh. even though he's now pushing, I guess he might be 35 years old now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is getting up there. Yeah, for sure.
All right. So, let's move to the running back position then, talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so talked about this a little bit earlier, but DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams are basically going to split carries. They really liked Jamal Williams's energy that he brings to the team. That's definitely been the new like theme of the Brad Holmes, Dan Campbell era. Detroit is just having good personalities in the locker room, because that didn't happen with Patricia. So they're going to split carries. Swift has 20 carries on the year. Jamal Williams has 16. So it's very similar running backs or what running back workloads, but different types of play styles too. Like Swift is very shifty. He's kind of more rubbery than Williams is. While Williams will kind of run up the middle, more like inside zone type of stuff, and just try to churn out yards.
And Swift is last year's number 2 pick, mm-hmm. and pretty high number 2. But is he a guy that you would have in on third down, or is he really more of a first and second down running down kind of player?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's a good all around back, but right now how they're doing it is kind of Williams is like mainly the first down running back. And then from there, they're kind of splitting carries and stuff like that.
All right. Very good. Let's see. What do we not hit on the offense here? I need to go back to my little outline here. Okay, you mentioned the 20 personnel being something. So that's always kind of cool because the Ravens have tried some things with 2 running backs, some mm-hmm. pony, mm-hmm. Almost always with additional inline players. So it might be 21 or 22 21, yeah. with a pony. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What other common plays and formations do they use that not a lot of other teams do?
Yeah, so they're using a lot of 12 personnel, and they really like to run out of 12 personnel. They even had one play against the 49ers where they brought in an additional offensive lineman. So they had six offensive linemen plus the two tight ends. It was fourth and two against the 49ers. So it was a pretty strong tell that they were going to run the ball, considering all the meat that they had in there. And then they ran it and they got stuffed. So that's why on the fourth and one against the Packers, they had passed, because I think they're a little bit scarred, based on, you know, running it on the other fourth down call.
On that three tight end play, effectively, because you got a sixth lineman is also a tight end. Was everybody in line, or did they have a tight end in the backfield, or what did they do?
Yeah, it was in line, and I think it was blocked fine, but Jamal Williams kind of tripped a little bit, and, you know, as he was getting back up, that's when the defensive lineman broke through and stuffed him.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's move over to the defensive side of the ball then. So the thing I always like to talk about, because these guests on the Know Your Foe segment are so good, and I know, Tej, this is a specialty of yours, is what are the most common base pass defense looks that the Lions use? Are they, you know, primarily a single high team, or take me through it?
Yeah, so the plan, I think, coming into the season was playing a lot of the split safety looks, because a lot of the Lions defensive coaching staff have either Saints or Rams roots in them. So you have Aaron Glenn, the defensive coordinator, who was the defensive backs coach last year for the Saints. And then under him are some guys that he kind of knew from the Rams, who ran a lot of split safety looks last year also. So that's what the plan was. But right now they're playing a lot more cover three than expected, and it's been a little bit interesting to see how they've adjusted their scheme based on what quarterback they were playing. So against Jimmy Garoppolo, they were playing a lot of cover three. They wanted, you know, because of the 49ers run game, they wanted an extra guy down there in a 3-4-4 type of thing. Against Aaron Rodgers, they played a more of a more of a 4-2-5. Where they wanted only six men in the box and some split safety looks and stuff like that. But, you know, against the Ravens, you can't play six men in the box, or you're going to get run over pretty much all day.
So I want to go back to the 4-2-5 a little bit. Are you talking about passing down specifically there, where they're a committed nickel team in a 4-2-5? Or you may not mean that, because our definitions may be different. You may mean a dime back is in as one of those two, but they have four down linemen, you know, your Mike linebacker, who may or may not have the green dot. I don't know what the situation is in Detroit, and then a dime back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't just passing situations only. Like, that was one of the complaints coming out on Monday night was, since they only had six men in the box, the Packers were running pretty easily and just getting like 4 or 5 yard carries. Then the Lions switched it, went back to single high, and then Aaron Rodgers took over. So it's really hard to play defense in the NFL and scheme stuff up. I definitely think they'll play single high against the Ravens so that they can stop the run game first.
Okay, all right. Let's move on. I want to spend some time talking about rotation, depth, and snap management, and in particular on the defensive line, because that's where the Ravens have gotten a lot of other teams into trouble, is that they don't really have a lot of depth on that line, and they have to play a lot of snaps, and they're high effort snaps, either trying to stop the run or having to rush the pass, or either one. I guess that's pretty much all snaps when I describe them that way, but it does really seem like they do a good job of physically leaning on other teams who are a little bit thin there and don't spread their snaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. It's still early in the season. So I think they're still trying to figure out exactly what they want to do with the defensive line, because there are some good resources there. Like Trey Flowers has been the better defensive lineman for the last couple of years for the Lions. So he plays on the edge, and he's basically been playing almost every snap after coming back from an injury that made him miss half of last season. So that's been good to see. And then on the other side, opposite him has been Romeo Okwara, who has played at just as many snaps as Trey Flowers. And, he kind of broke out last year with a lot of sacks, but I didn't know if it was super sustainable because of the pressures. You know, like one of the things the Ravens like to do is they pay people for pressures, knowing that the sacks will come later. Like, that's what a smart organization does. Okwara was paid more for sacks So it'll be, he hasn't played well so far this year. So it'll be interesting to see how he does against the Ravens offensive line.
Yeah, your old boss came on the show recently. You may have even listened to him talk through this, but Eric did a great discussion of exactly that, about how the Ravens are one of the organizations who got out of ahead of it in terms of pricing the pressure rate appropriately for the player they had. And he thought the Bowser signing was a good one.
Yeah.
I love the Bowser signing for coverage, but yeah. So one player I'm noticing is Michael Brockers, who the Ravens are interested in. A couple of years ago, it didn't work out for workout reasons, as it was reported, has played 91 out of 120 snaps, which is extremely high. That's over 75%, obviously. The question I guess I have for you is that something you expect to be sustainable for an entire season, or something that they would even use against the Ravens in particular?
Yeah, I do think Brockers will play the majority of the snaps. That's someone that Lions general manager Brad Holmes drafted when he was in LA. And then he traded a seventh round pick for him this offseason to kind of take on his contract too. So yeah, he's definitely someone that will be on the field a lot, especially if they play those split safety looks, because Brockers was so good last year with the Rams playing the gap in the half that they installed on the defensive line. So, you know,
Explain that. Go ahead.
Yeah. So plug like your gap in the running game, but also make sure you have the half of the gap that someone else will be, you know, taking the other half to cover. So you don't get gashed in the running game when you're playing these light boxes.
Okay. Very interesting. Very interesting. So it's not a two gap responsibility where you don't have the ability to penetrate, but you have to control that other gap by pushing a player in that direction? Or what does it entail in terms of a difference in play style to play a gap and a half, I'm guessing? Because I haven't heard that terminology before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's very new, and I'm still kind of learning, the exact terminology about it. But yeah, you can't like fully penetrate, but you want to make sure you have the gap that you're assigned to covered for sure. But then, you know, like a backside gap or the half of the gap over also should be shielded and looked out for if they're trying to run up that that direction.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Let's move on. Let's talk about the defensive line one player at a time and go through it. And you know, who's likely, if you want to include the edge in this is fine. And I think one of the questions we have for starters is the Lions are 4-3 or 3-14?
4-3.
4-3. Okay, so this is, I believe, three straight now 4-3 teams the Ravens have faced. So they're getting pretty used to this. I didn't realize it had become more dominant again in the NFL. But looking ahead, they've got the Steelers in division and Cleveland in division, who are predominantly 4-3 teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Take us through the players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Michael Brock is, like we talked about earlier. Then Nick Williams is he's not like a great defensive lineman, not a great interior defensive lineman, but he's a good tackler. Like if he does, you know, get his hands on a running back, he'll almost always bring them down, even like with just like one arm, if he doesn't have full control and stuff like that. So that's definitely his specialty. And then, yeah. And then Aleem McNeil, who has played about like 50 snaps so far, kind of under him there is someone who also is, again, like a big body, can tackle well, and stuff like that.
Okay, so it's really just those three. Pennacini has played a few snaps as well, I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pennacini's, you know, he's a bigger body, but he didn't have a good last season, so I think they're trying to filter him out.
Okay. All right, fair enough. And I didn't miss anyone, did I?
Mm-hmm.
How about Kevin Strong? That name is new to me.
Yeah, Kevin Strong is, again, like he's the kind of the opposite of what we talked about earlier. Not a good tackler, but he's had flashes, but I don't think he's going to be like a long term starter in this league or anything.
So and this is really important when you come into a game against the Ravens, are they a team that has five interior guys they can choose from, or four, since they're a 4-3 team and may only have two on the field for a lot of plays?
Yeah, I think they're going to only have two on the field for a lot of plays.
I'm sorry, I didn't ask that question correctly. Does that mean they're going to activate four or activate five more likely?
Oh, they'll probably activate five, I think, between the five that we talked about, yeah.
Okay, so that's certainly a lot. Five to make two gives you a lot of rotational ability, and that might be something that the Ravens can't count on winning. Snap count really giving them an advantage. And owner Zirke, I mean, he's an interior player as well. He would be likely active or likely not against the Ravens.
Yeah, he'll likely be active. So I guess they'll take six with him, and then because they play their edge rushers so much between Okwara and Flowers, I think. So yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Let's go to the linebacker crew in terms of how they're used. And one of the things I'm always interested in hearing is when they go to passing downs, do they take a linebacker off the field, or is the team fairly committed to playing two linebackers on most snaps?
Yeah, a lot of talk in training camp was talking about in these passing downs playing like more three safeties and removing a linebacker, but we haven't really seen that so far. I don't know why they haven't done it. I don't know like what changed, or maybe just the offenses they've played. So we'll see if they get to that eventually, because the linebackers aren't good right now.
Okay, so Jamie Collins is on the team. Obviously, a guy who spent a lot of time in the AFC with New England and with Cleveland. He's not having an okay year.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, he's starting to get a little bit older, but he just looks like he's slow whenever he's covering anyone. He got matched up on Aaron Jones a couple times in that Green Bay game, and it was really, really bad. Just Aaron Jones running right by him, you know, catching a pass and then, you know, sprinting by him even further down the field.
You want to feel old? Jamie Collins is almost 32 years old. He'll be 32 in November. I'm shocked by that.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Time flies. You got to make it work. All right. So, and then at the other inside linebacker position, or I'll say off ball linebacker in the 4-3, we'll call it. It's really a lot of Alex Anzalone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alex Anzalone is from the Saints. He was part of the linebackers that they, or the players that they couldn't keep because of their contract or cap situation this season. I think he's been really, really bad in coverage. Like I've been pretty disappointed with his play so far. And again, he was another one of those players in the Green Bay game that got kind of matched up on Aaron Jones, or another one of Green Bay's weapons, and just kept getting burned in coverage. So linebacker core is definitely the weakness of the defense for sure.
All right. The Ravens have not gotten their play action game going so far this year in terms of any kind of, well, really any sort of play action. And it was the secret sauce for the 2019 team, and they did it not as well in 2020. Is this a team that they might have some opportunity against in terms of a group that will take extra read steps and kind of leave themselves in a bad position?
I definitely think so. Yeah. It's definitely a team where if you haven't been able to take advantage of linebackers so far, like if you haven't got your tight end going because of that, or your receiving back, they can get going against this Lions defense because of those linebackers.
All right. Fair enough. Great stuff. Let's move on to the secondary here then. And there's nothing else about another outside linebacker or whatever that you want to talk about. You've already talked about them as edges.
So one of the interesting things that I think might happen in this game is Derek Barnes, one of the linebackers, draft picks from Purdue. He is supposedly great against the run, and he's really quick. Like, he's a lot faster than Anzalone and Collins are. So I'm wondering if they start to play him a lot more, because he was a day three pick that they haven't played but looked good in the preseason. So to stop the Ravens' run game, he might be the only hope or something like that.
Interesting. You present a very much there's no chance for the Lions in this game, and I'm see the Ravens going on the road as an 8-point favorite or thereabouts. Maybe it's 7.5 a lot of places, 8 other places, and I'm scared to death of that line. I mean, I look at that and say, well, yeah, that seems like way too much on the road against anybody, right? For this Ravens team as currently constituted, they haven't stopped anybody on defense, and frankly, their offensive line is in shambles, and they're really having to try and correct it on the fly. Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about the secondary here and who's still standing. This is something that happens every year. The replacement level in the secondary is a moving target. Mm-hmm. It drops. precipitously in the secondary. Dropped some at defensive line and inside linebacker, but those at inside linebacker in particular, it's an easy size and shape category that there are more players available. At cornerback, boy, this year it just seems like there's a big fall off, and the Ravens, who seem to be really stocked, and for example, are already having trouble, and the Lions, of course, having their trouble too.
Yep. Yeah, it definitely seems like this is one of the years in the NFL where the secondaries aren't as good, or there's just, you know, there's not as many good secondaries. So hopefully with the college talent pool coming in, we're going to get some better corners and stuff like that, because, yeah, like you said, it doesn't seem like it's as high level as usual.
Do you think that the 2021 draft in particular, with all of the small school prospects really not getting a chance to play, or not much, only a few small school draft picks taken, and all of the a number of players either opting out and maybe wanting to wait and play another season, or realizing that this year was just not scouted the same way, wanted to defer and play another year in college, do you think we'll have like a season and a third, say, of prospects in the 2022 draft?
That's what I'm thinking right now too. Yeah, I definitely could see that happening. I definitely think that the secondary talent pool in the NFL needs that to happen.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, right now the Ravens, with all the running back injuries, are feeling the heat of just how lousy the backup running backs are in this league. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they sign, you know, Freeman, Bell, and Murray tells you that's so anti-Ravens in terms of, you know, they would, you typically want to get the best first year running back you like most and somebody else's practice squad. That's, you know, they did with Collins and a whole bunch of other players they brought in here. Like, and it just, there wasn't anybody available that met that description.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Crazy.
All right. Let's go through the remaining players of the secondary for the Lions. I'm sorry to hold you up there.
Yeah, no, totally fine. So Amani Owarie is he's going to be the future, cornerback number two, if Okuda can develop into quarterback number one. So he's really good when he's on a second wide receiver. I assume he has to play corner one for this game. So I assume he'll be on Brown for a lot of it. He has ups and downs. He was only targeted once in the first half against Green Bay. He's doing a good job there. They kind of changed up their scheme in the second half, and then he got targeted a couple more times. But I do like what I see out of him. But the rest of the secondary isn't up to his level.
All right. I mean, take us through the players here. You don't need to get me to prod you on these. So Okuda obviously is lost. Bobby Price got some snaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bobby Price, filled in when Melifonu, who was the Lions' fourth round pick this year, he's a very tall, a corner hybrid safety type player. So he got injured in the Green Bay game. Then Bobby Price came in.
Yeah, if memory serves, Melifonu, the Syracuse guy, that's where I went to school. But that Syracuse secondary last year was quite good. And Melifonu was an interesting prospect that I kind of thought I liked, with Trill Williams as well. Either one of those two to be taken by the Ravens. They didn't obviously get either of them. But, okay, very good. So Melifonu, what have you seen so far from him?
Yeah, I thought he was great against Green Bay until, you know, he got injured on like a, I think it was like a 45-yard pass play to Davante Adams, where I think it was like his hamstring or something kind of blew out as he was running with him. So yeah, Bobby Price will replace him, and then the real area to attack in the Lions secondary are the two safeties, kind of up at the top more, is Tracy Walker and Will Harris. Walker was really good in 2019, and like it was very exciting to see him progress like that. Took a huge step back in 2020, and then kind of a similar story with Will Harris, where he showed some flashes, but he's another slow defensive player that can't keep up with speed. So I can definitely see Hollywood Brown running past him at some point on Sunday.
Interesting. Okay. And he's more of a single high guy at this point?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. All right. Very cool. All right. Well, it certainly gives us quite a bit of insight into who the Detroit Lions are. I really appreciate that. The Ravens don't play the Lions very often, and our fans whenever it's an NFC team in particular, I believe these things are extremely useful. We love them for the AFC teams too, even in the divisional games where we're fairly familiar with the personnel. But when we really have no idea, like with the Lions, I think it's great to get a rundown from a guy like you, Tage. Is there a player you think matches up exceptionally well against the Ravens?
Yeah, I think you know their best shot of keeping the game close is to feed TJ Hockenson, especially with what we just saw with Kelce last week. Is if Hockenson gets hot and you know he's making good catches and he's getting yak as he usually does, the Lions can put up some points.
All right, let's talk about where folks can find your work. What's your Twitter handle for starters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my Twitter handle is at TEJFB Analytics. So Tage FB Analytics, if you want to follow me there.
All right, terrific. Other plugs you want to make? I mean, work you've done on PFF, new charts, new projects you're working on, anything you're doing at school that's kind of cool with football related?
Yeah. You can find a lot of my stuff at Pro Football Focus or PFF.com. Just go over to PFF.com, type in my name to the search bar. Some of my articles will pop up. I think the one that Ravens fans will probably be most interested in is kind of covered scheme uniqueness score, since the Ravens are, you know, have a little bit of more unique covered scheme compared to the rest of the NFL.
Highly recommend that piece. Got some great definitional information there, but you know, learn what cover three slot is, for example. But great definitional information, but also really underscores some of the differences from the Ravens and other teams that you'll like. You did that war adjusted injuries lost piece for us. Really appreciated that. That's still out on the site. If you go to the video section, and you can see Tage going through his new metric of adjudicating the amount of war lost to injuries. And it's a complex calculation, difficult thing to do, but it'll tell you exactly what we knew, that the 2015 Ravens got absolutely screwed by that. All right. Tage, thanks so much for joining us. This is a great pleasure always to have you on. We hope we can do it again in the future, but appreciate you making time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. We'd definitely love to come back in the future.
All right. Thanks again, Tage. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
On Film Study.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.